I'm Brandi Cruz. Coming up today on Undivided, we'll of course recap the big moments from the State of the Union and the moment that brought tears to the eyes of a local mom whose daughter's been missing for 2 months. Plus, local media completely ignores the story of a teen girl beaten over her alleged support of Donald Trump. And Bob Ferguson's biggest campaign promise falls flat. We knew it would. That and much more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month by becoming a paid subscriber. Go to UndividedPod.com, UndividedPod.com. Click on the banner that says support the show. Hello, hello, and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. We're going to talk about the State of the Union and national, of course, but I think off the top, there were some elements of it that really spoke to some issues we've been covering quite a bit. I will say, especially as a former TDSer, I thought it was his best speech he's ever given. I thought he really stayed on track in a way that maybe the president doesn't always do, but he was able to have his moments of levity. I thought it was a celebration of America, especially as we're celebrating 250 years of the country. And the president gave Democrats just enough rope to hang themselves. So again, I'll discuss some key moments in national, but to me, this is the clip that should be played on repeat every single day during the midterm elections. And it speaks to, I think, the sentiment of why, over the course of especially the last 5 years, I've been red-pilled so much. And it's this understanding that the Democratic Party has become this party that puts feelings ahead of reality, this party that puts every other interest, it seems, ahead of what's in the best interest of our country. And I thought the way the president did this, I don't know if it was scripted like this, but it was absolutely masterful. Watch.
If you agree with this statement, then stand up and show your support. The first duty of the American government is to protect American citizens, not illegal aliens.
And all Democrats except one stayed seated and refused to clap. And it was so smart the way they did this, because he just let the applause continue. He let the moment continue. And I don't know if it was scripted for him to say, if you agree with this, stand. But it was, and he shows. I mean, and he kept going. I mean, what do you think, 5 minutes? Maybe it felt like 5 minutes, probably 2.5, Nicole says. Because he wants everyone to see that for something that is so sane and common sense, Democrats, because they hate him so much, because they think he's this racist, horrible person, and it's not okay to love your country first, they just sit there. And what a moment that is. When you have one party that's saying, of course we're going to put the American people first. And then you have another side that will just sit there and allow it to happen, knowing how bad it looks for them. Look at that. And they say, oh, that was a horrible moment because Trump is so racist and he hates immigrants and all of this stuff. No, he loves our country. And given everything that's happened, how can you really say that it's not your duty? You're elected to Congress. How can you say it's not your duty to put the American people ahead of illegal aliens? And all they had to do is stand up and say, yeah, of course, of course. And you would have taken that moment away from him. But he knew it was so predictable. He knew what they would do. Because they despise him so much, because they suffer from TDS, because they can't let him have a win on the immigration issue, even though he closed down the southern border in a matter of days. They want to make him seem like a hateful bigot. They gave him the most powerful ammunition for the midterm elections that they could have given him. So one other moment I have to talk about, because of course we've discussed radical gender ideology and the extent to which there's this effort to break up the nuclear family in Washington state. And we got word before the State of the Union that one of President Trump's guests was going to be a young girl who went through something very similar to what's happening to families in Washington state, where the state essentially kidnaps kids in the name of radical gender ideology. It's like transgender trafficking. And so he told the story of a young girl named Sage.
In the gallery tonight are Sage Blair and her mother, Michelle. In 2021, Sage was 14 when school officials in Virginia sought to socially transition her to a new gender, treating her as a boy and hiding it from her parents. Hard to believe, isn't it? Before long, a confused Sage ran away from home after she was found in a horrific situation in Maryland. A left-wing judge refused to return Sage to her parents because they did not immediately state that their daughter was their son. Sage was thrown into an all-boys state home and suffered terribly for a long time. But today, all of that is behind them because Sage is a proud and wonderful young woman with a full-ride scholarship to Liberty University. Sage and Michelle, please stand up.
I mean, just awesome to see. I mean, sad story, right? But I mean, a couple years ago, we were being called crazy for suggesting that Senate Bill 5599 in Washington State would do just that, would basically disappear these kids so they could be radicalized and given transgender treatments or surgeries. And to see a story like that highlighted in the biggest way, and to see that young girl there, you know, trying to get back to her life as normal and understanding now what happened to her was insane. And then to see that Democrats wouldn't stand up and applaud or recognize the horror of what was done to that young girl.
But surely we can all agree no state can be allowed to rip children from their parents' arms and transition them to a new gender against the parents' will. Who would believe that we've been talking about this? We must ban it, and we must ban it immediately.
Oh, my God.
Look, nobody stands up. These people are crazy, I'm telling you. They're crazy.
I'm sorry, but that is crazy. That is absolutely crazy. And what a moment, too. It's like, no, we should all agree that states can't rip kids away from their families because they don't support some desired gender ideology. Not a single Democrat. And we already know that this is happening in our state. We brought you the story of Eleanor, who, very similar situation to what was described with Sage. School, an outside law firm funded by taxpayers, a radical judge helped rip Eleanor away from her family. They fled to Texas. Eleanor's been missing now for almost 3 months. When we brought you the story initially, it was 2 months. And Eleanor's mom, immediately when that moment happened with Sage, she sent us a text message and gave us permission to share some of her thoughts with you. She told us, "I'm crying because even though Sage was reunited with her family, Eleanor is still gone, and so many other families are currently dealing with this situation." That's from Jody Holman, Eleanor's mom. And yeah, I mean, she was emotional because there's some recognition that what is happening to these kids is so wrong. But then also to see that young girl, and for Jody to know that her daughter is still missing, doesn't know if she's alive or dead, doesn't know who she's with, where she is. Horrible situation. We want all kids who have been taken from their families over radical gender ideology to be reunited with their loving families. Not just Sage, but awesome that the president chose to highlight what's happening across this country and in places like Washington State. All right, an update of sorts on the story that we broke here on Monday over a brutal attack at a middle school in Burlington, Washington. Again, I'm avoiding on the live show playing the video because YouTube's pretty sensitive about stuff like this. But essentially, this 13-year-old girl, she was in a locker room at Lucille Umbarger Middle School in the Burlington Edison School District when allegedly two girls asked her if she supported Donald Trump and ICE because of a social media post, this girl's boyfriend, a joke he had made about wanting to become an ICE agent. She told them, allegedly, it was none of their business, and that's when they beat her senseless. So we did finally get a response from the Burlington School District, but it's a lot like the response that we heard from the police department, basically saying this is ongoing, there's not a lot we can say, but since this video has been viewed so many times, we thought we'd share with you what the school district said. We are limited in what we can share due to federal student privacy laws. What we can share is that student safety is always our top priority. When incidents occur, they are addressed promptly in accordance with district policies and school safety procedures. We work directly with the students involved and their families, and appropriate consequences and supports are provided based on the specific circumstances, which I call BS because the principal didn't call the mom for 5 days. And I think that's entirely unacceptable. Now, here is something that did happen, however. Were you told about this, Nicole, or did you spot this? I think somebody told you about this, right? Mm-hmm. So went and looked at it. The Burlington Edison School District has a new job opening. A new job opening for a temporary campus security guard at Lucille Umbarger Middle School. So that obviously isn't a coincidence that they are hiring a temporary security guard at a middle school, and they have an immediate deadline on the application of March 2nd, so they want a security guard to be there immediately.
And to be clear, they do have one. They're hiring an additional one.
They want
one.
An additional security guard to be able to, I don't know, make sure that 13-year-old girls aren't beat senseless in the locker room over their perceived political views. One other thing we wanted to point out today about this, not one local news station has covered it. Brutal beating of a 13-year-old girl who says it's because these girls thought she supported Donald Trump. Not one local news station has covered this story. It's been viewed, 10 million times, I think, at last check. I believe it was on Sean Hannity last night. So it's gotten a lot of coverage, but not from the local news. Do you think, let's reverse the races involved and the politics involved. We now believe that one of the girls is Hispanic, the other one is white, and the girl who was beaten was white. Let's say it was two white girls beat up a Hispanic girl because she didn't support Trump. They didn't think she supported Trump. Do you really think that King, Cairo, Como, Fox 13, the Seattle Times, and every single legacy news station in the state wouldn't have covered it immediately and been still covering it today? Of course they would. It's absolutely insane. I cannot fathom not covering a story like this. And I would like to believe that we would also cover it. If there was a child beaten in school over their perceived politics and the school didn't call the family for 5 days, we would absolutely cover it on this show. And it just shows you they want to bury that this is happening. They want to bury the left's propensity for violence and the hate that they're pushing onto children. Because I've said, this is an adult issue. Adults put this seed of hate in the heads of these girls to allegedly beat up. Well, we know they beat her up. The allegation from the girl is it was because of a joke her boyfriend posted about wanting to work for ICE and them demanding to know whether she supported Trump and ICE as well. Absolutely insane. Now, a couple things. The girls that committed this assault are scheduled to return to the school in 2 weeks. That's what we're hearing from the family of the victim. So I think that's the timing there on trying to get another campus security guard in place. We know police are investigating, and we're going to follow up and see when charges are filed. I don't see how charges couldn't be filed. It's literally on video. So obviously there needs to be charges here. What those will be, I don't know. One of the things that I want to say is in the video, Nicole, you can pull up the still for me again. A couple things. So there's a girl who popped in, and you kind of see her a little bit on the left there. And you see her in the video walking in and then walking out. And a lot of people on the internet were sort of vicious toward that girl for saying, why didn't you stop it? What we've learned is she was going to get help. So I don't blame a girl for not wanting to intervene in a brutal beating. And so that girl, I'm told, went to get help immediately. So for people who are questioning whether no one did something, I mean, the girl who's filming, yeah, I want to know who the girl filming is and whether there's any consequences for filming a beating and not doing anything about it. And also, according to the family, the mother of the victim, a restraining order is in place. But I want to know how we can see, how do you send kids back to school if the girl has a restraining order against them? That seems problematic because last I checked, a restraining order is 500 feet, 1,000 feet. So how can you be in the same school if there's a restraining order in place? So we're going to continue to follow up on all of this. Additional security guard being hired. School district says we're looking into it. Police, we're weighing whether charges should be filed. And local news media doing jack. Not covering it, not worthy. A girl on video being brutally beaten. Absolutely outrageous. All right, coming up next, our friend Jonathan Cho is going to be joining us because he has been hounding Seattle's new socialist mayor, Katie Wilson, about what she's going to do about the homeless crisis and about a story she told at her State of the City address that turned out to be
kind of only a half truth. We'll discuss that. First, we have a couple days left in February. So Valentine Roofing is still running its expanded customer referral program. So when you refer friends or family for a new roof or siding, you'll earn your choice of a free maintenance service or a $250 gift card. So if you've gotten a Valentine roof or siding recently and you haven't referred any friends or family, now is the time to do that, to cash in on that expanded referral. And as you know, you can always be confident when referring your loved ones because every Valentine Roofing customer receives the Valentine experience, seamless communication, meticulous cleanup, and extra mile service even in winter weather. And if you do need a new roof or you're thinking about it, you know, first have them come out and just check it out. You might not need a new roof. It might be something that they can repair. But if you do, they have flexible financing options with payments as low as $159 a month and zero down. So a Valentine roof is a roof built around your budget. So call 206 Roofing. Schedule your free estimate today. And if you've already got work done with Valentine, make sure you refer a friend or family in the month of February before it ends. 206 Roofing, 206 Roofing. Okay, so a few months ago now, we ran a story about what I think really was the new socialist mayor of Seattle's first big test on how she was going to deal with homelessness. And to be clear, and I don't use the phrase socialist lightly, she is a socialist, and she's not even bothered by that terminology. She doesn't belong to the Democratic Socialists of America or Seattle, but she really hasn't rejected the term socialist or even communist, because that's what she is. But she's been very anti-sweep in her previous life, running this transit blog, so very far left. But then all of a sudden, you're the mayor of a city that has a profound homeless crisis, where the FIFA World Cup is coming, and there's all going to be all this worldwide attention on your city. And so, you know, she's sort of in this place of, do I appease the activists or do I do what needs to be done to clear the streets? I don't think she really knows yet. And that became very apparent when there was this Ballard homeless encampment that was just totally out of control. And it was along a trail and runners were sort of worried about it and worried for their safety. And the community in Ballard is sick of having these disgusting overflowing homeless encampments. And so there was a sweep scheduled and she decided to halt it. And I gave her credit at the time only because she halted it, but then she went to view and tour the encampment and sort of told people, look, I'm finding my way, which is crazy that you'd run for mayor not really knowing what your plan was going to be on homelessness, considering that's one of the fundamental issues the city is facing. But at least she went there and looked around and toured it. But I thought it was a mistake not to clear the encampment. So then a few months go by, she gives her first State of the City address and she brings up this encampment and talks about some success that they'd had in getting people out of the encampment into a better situation.
So last month I visited an encampment in Ballard that was scheduled to be cleared. After hearing from concerned community members, I decided to extend the timeline to clear that site because I thought that better outcomes were possible for the people living there, their neighbors, and local businesses. And the conversations that I had there at the site really underscored the reality that we simply do not have enough housing, shelter, and services for everyone who is living unsheltered. There I talked with a woman who was 5 months sober and had three small dogs, and she was struggling to find a place to sleep inside. With some work, we were able to identify a spot for her in a tiny house village. Our teams also helped 5 more people living at that encampment to secure housing or shelter. And by extending that deadline, we were able to help them make that transition without additional displacement. And I'm grateful for that.
And look, that sounds like a great story. Okay, you were able to, you didn't sweep it right away, but you went back and you helped people get out of there. And she told the story about the woman with three dogs who she was able to get into a tiny house, except the story doesn't end there. So Jonathan Cho, who's an independent journalist, does a lot of work on the homeless front for Discovery Institute, and our friend Andrea Suarez with We Heart Seattle, they decided not to take the mayor at her word. And they went out and they found that lady with the three dogs and she was back in a tent.
Oh, no.
Surrounded by drug paraphernalia and a sense of despair, Crystal Rawlings and her dogs are still living in a Ballard tent encampment.
I'm not going to be ungrateful for anything.
She spoke to me exclusively and says the city offered her a tiny house in Intrabay Village.
I just thought that something big in the works was bigger than a tiny home.
It's run by the Low Income Housing Institute, one of the many nonprofits contracted by the city for homeless services.
I'm not going to have them breathing in that mold.
However, Rawlings claims Unit 71...
I don't understand why they let anyone move into it, because it's... Like, just look, you'll see.
...was infested with dangerous black mold that can cause serious health risks like severe allergies and breathing problems.
Wow, that's black mold.
Ew.
I personally visited this tiny house to verify her claims.
Not only that, it's filthy. It's disgusting.
Rawlings says she was absolutely incensed.
Why did you use me as an example? And that's not an example. The city does that all the time. Whenever there's a tiny home available, they give it to one of us.
Feeling used and betrayed.
Gotcha. I mean, again, on the independent media front, I hate to say it, but if Jonathan Cho and Andrea Suarez hadn't gone out and be like, I wonder how true that is. And look, the mayor might have thought it was true. Last she heard, chick with three dogs was heading to a tiny house. We got it secured. Maybe she didn't know that it had black mold and that it was disgusting and that she decided to move back into a tent. Well, you know now. You know now. So what are you going to do about it? Well, Jonathan Cho went and confronted Seattle Mayor Katie Wilson with what they found.
Report to the front for a group photo. Please report to the front relatively quickly.
Hey, Mayor Wilson, are you aware that the woman you referenced with the three dogs in your state of the city?
We were able to identify a spot for her in a tiny house village.
Is now back on the streets.
Why did you use me as an example?
She says the tiny house had mold in it.
The place was riddled in mold.
Do you know what happened there, Mayor Wilson? Can you just give us an explanation of what happened there? There was also a sweep this morning in Ballard.
There's nowhere to go. They just pushed us around.
You said sweeps don't work in your state of the city.
And we cannot just keep moving people from place to place.
I love Jonathan.
And calling that progress.
So I just wanted to know how much longer you plan on sweeping or if anything is going to change from the Herald administration. Do you have any comment on that, Mayor? Thoughts?
Oh, and then she gets off into her big SUV, the transit blogger. Oh, cars are bad. Let me just get my security into my SUV and drive away. And those are legitimate questions. You used this woman as an example. And look, do I think the tiny house, even with black mold, was probably an upgrade from a tent? Yeah. Or are there other things at play? I'm sure. But this is the challenge with shuffling people from place to place. This is the challenge with housing first, where you have convinced yourself that, if we just get them out of the tent, that's an improvement in their lives. And that's not true. You have to deal with the underlying issues of why they're living in a tent or on the sidewalk in the first place. And until you do that, you literally have not done anything. You haven't done anything. And then how ridiculous to be, for an extended period of time with Jonathan, reasonable questions asked in a very professional manner. Hey, she said there was mold. She's back in the tent. And why wouldn't you just say, as Katie Wilson, hey, I hadn't heard that. I'll look into it. Thank you for letting me know. Why are these politicians so horrible at their jobs? Anyway, that happened. Great work from Jonathan Cho. We wanted to bring him on the show today to talk about that and just what the plan is. Does she have a plan moving forward? Jonathan Cho, welcome back to Undivided.
Hey, Brandy.
Man, is she just out of her depth? Is that what we're seeing here?
Well, she isn't doing anything different from the previous administration under Bruce Harrell. So we've got to figure out what her new game plan is.
Well, when you say that, what do you mean? Because what I see from her in all of this is I feel like she's having a hard time, you know, staying true to her sort of communist socialist base, but also doing maybe what she knows needs to be done. So I don't know. I mean, I see maybe her being torn in two directions and she doesn't know what direction to go in.
Well, look, I think the FIFA World Cup that's coming to Seattle in the next few months, that's front and center. The goal is to keep the downtown core, all the tourist hotspots clear of all these tents and encampments. With that said, she still has the values of you know, Stop the Sweep Seattle. Her group, the Transit Riders Union, in the past has aligned with Stop the Sweep Seattle, and this is the far-left activist groups that gets in the way of cops and the city from clearing encampments. And surprisingly, Stop the Sweeps has been absolutely quiet. Recently, they just put out a statement saying that the mayor needs to stop all encampment clearings. But outside of that, I think the mayor is torn right now in terms of what direction to go.
Well, what direction will she go when push comes to shove? I mean, like you said, the World Cup is huge for the city. I think she probably wants to be seen as competent, given how much criticism there has been that she has virtually no experience. So, you know, if the Stop the Sweeps crowd, which you're very familiar with, if they get as aggressive as they were under Harrell, do you think she folds?
Well, I don't think that's going to happen, like I said, because if they wanted to protest, if they wanted to get in front of these encampment sweeps after 2 months now in office for Katie Wilson, they would have done that. So I don't think anything's going to change in terms of forward-facing public outcry or protests. But I do believe that Katie Wilson, again, is being squeezed from, you know, the grown-ups at City Hall who are like, look, you can't just leave encampments out here. You've got to clear them. At the same time, she still wants to hold true to her ethos of housing first. And that's essentially giving everyone, you know, a tiny house or an apartment before clearing an encampment. But for the time being, until an actual plan is crafted, again, that's different from former Mayor Bruce Harrell's plan of sweeping these encampments. We're just going to see, again, this tension on the streets.
Well, and it's pretty stunning to me that here you have, you know, this obvious evidence that this person that the mayor bragged about helping is, you know, gets put in a place with black mold, is back in a tent. The fact that with all the money we spend, if there was black mold in a tiny house, they wouldn't have immediately found another solution for her is stunning.
Yeah, and I think this story really exposed what's been happening now for years in Seattle, right? You've got these politicians who are really not experts. They're generalists listening to the activist class in the homeless industrial complex that just say, hey, we've just got to give housing to everybody and then it'll all be taken care of. But what we're now finding is there's very little oversight, virtually no audits, and zero accountability. And I was able to, again, follow this journey with the help of We Heart Seattle and Andrea Suarez, who found this woman with the three dogs that the mayor was referencing in her State of the City address. And the mayor took an ill-advised victory lap, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah. So on this, at the state level, since we are still in the legislative session, you know, President Trump had this executive order seeking to dismantle housing first. And of course, if Trump does anything, then we're just going to go in the exact opposite direction. So there's these efforts at the state level to dive even deeper into housing first. Where do those stand right now?
Yeah, well, you know, this is now in a Senate hearing committee, and it very likely will get onto the Senate floor for a vote because it's already passed the House, and then it'll end up at, you know, the governor's desk for a signing. But what's happening here right now is essentially that these Housing First facilities and some of the biggest operators, Plymouth Housing, the Downtown Emergency Service Center, Catholic Community Charities, we all know now, and I've reported on this for years, the moment these Housing First facilities come in, you see a spike in 911 calls. You see more crime, chaos, and death in these communities. And what this bill will essentially do now is allow the state to force these permanent supportive housing units into communities with virtually zero public input or the ability to push back. So this gives control, ultimately, to the government to do whatever they want.
Yeah, I mean, just insane. The exact opposite of what we need to be doing. And, you know, we discussed this on the show yesterday with a different topic, but these less restrictive alternative housing settings for violent sex predators. And these communities just end up blindsided by it. And then there's this big fight and back and forth. And you see those and have covered them all the time with these affordable housing units or housing for the homeless. You know, it never ends up well when you try to surprise a community with something like that. And so the fact that the state just doesn't want to work with community partners to really discuss ahead of time. I mean, think back to the Chinatown International District when the county tried to pull, you know, that stunt of expanding this homelessness complex and then the community revolted. So, I mean, what do you think you'll see a lot of pushback from cities if this passes?
Well, the problem is now that this bill, like all of these homelessness or drug bills, it's quietly winding its way through the legislature because there's virtually zero mainstream media coverage. And like you said, Brandy, these communities then find out at the last minute. Of course, some of the lawmakers at the local level, especially on the Republican side, they're trying to sound the alarm saying this is crazy, this is going to ruin communities. But again, when you have a super majority, basically a majority, the Democrats, you know, one party rule, it falls on deaf ears.
Yeah, you do whatever you want, even if it doesn't work. Really funny, Jonathan, I get texts not infrequently from Seattle police officers who show up to some of these apartments or, you know, homeless housing, and they see pictures of you and Andrea up that says, don't talk to these people. And I know there's some of that, but it's everywhere. I mean, your picture is in these things like, and Andrea's, don't talk to these people. And I'm thinking, why? Because they're going to tell the truth, or Andrea's going to actually get them help for what they're dealing with?
Exactly. I'm technically banned from DESC, the Downtown Emergency Service Center. I've been trespassed from there. I've also been trespassed at Plymouth Housing with Andrea. And your face was also up a few months ago at the Plymouth Housing ribbon cutting ceremony in Redmond, Washington. You're not allowed at that facility either, simply because you retweeted and talked about one of my stories.
Crazy. I haven't even been out to any of these facilities, so I don't know how they could like ban me from them. Wild.
Well, you're not welcome.
Yeah, okay, great. Well, they're not welcome at my house either. All right, Jonathan, keep up the great work and keep pressing Mayor Wilson and others to try to deal with this issue in a meaningful way. We appreciate it.
Yeah, all I do is ask questions for a living, Brandy.
Yeah, it's just wild. And let me tell you something about, first of all, the media will just believe what Katie Wilson says. So the media will get up there, just believe what Katie Wilson says. Oh, great. Oh, the homeless camp's cleared. What a win. Jonathan is one of the only people, and did it with Andrea Suarez, who will go out there, actually do the work. Like, is that true? Let's go back to this homeless encampment. Let's see what it looks like. Let's talk to people there. Find this woman, confronts her with the questions. The mayor won't answer. It's absolutely insane. I mean, it's a clown show. And then the model of responding to homelessness in Seattle, which is no model at all, is now they're trying to push it on every city in the state. Down in Olympia, they're like, let's make everyone in the state use the model that the city in our state with the worst homeless crisis uses to solve it. It's just wild. Really quick on the independent journalist front, because Jonathan Cho and I and Ori Hoffman at KVI, we are all co-plaintiffs in a lawsuit right now against the state of Washington, as you know, for having our press credential in the Washington State House of Representatives denied over our perceived political involvement or whatever it is. Well, I just got confirmation, and I want to share this with you because this is going to happen really quickly. So we finally got a court date, which it was weird what was happening because, and the reason I'm bringing this up now is we just had Cho on and it kind of reminded me to update you guys on this. We hadn't been given a case number or a court date for days and days and days. And the clock is ticking because it's a short legislative session. And so it was really important to get the case heard urgently so there could be sort of this intervention and get the state to change its mind. So next Friday we have our court date, but get this. The state of Washington has farmed their case out to an outside law firm in Seattle called Summit Law. So rather than the attorney general's office defending why he believes the state of Washington should be able to deny us press passes, why he believes the state of Washington should be able to decide who's a journalist and who's not, they are now spending even more of your money to hire a Seattle law firm to go to court next Friday and argue that the three of us shouldn't have a press pass to the House of Representatives, despite the fact I can go in the Senate, despite the fact I can go to press conferences at the Attorney General's office, at the Governor's office. Just this one entity, the real thin-skinned Speaker of the House, Lori Jenkins, doesn't want us to have press passes into there. And now the state of Washington is going to fight us on it with less than a month left in the legislative session. And they're hiring a high-priced law firm in Seattle to do the dirty work. Email the Attorney General's office today. Politely, of course, ask them why they would hire an outside law firm to try to keep us out of one chamber in Olympia and why they would spend so much money fighting us on press passes when even the governor says that I can come into his press conferences. Absolutely insane. So we'll see what happens at court, but oh, got to bring in the Seattle law firm. Can't use the massive resources that we already pay for at the Attorney General's office. And I really think it's because he doesn't want to do the dirty work. He wants to be able to say, well, we farmed that out to an outside law firm. Outrageous. All right, we'll get to our segment, Unbelievable, coming up next. First, could the future of AI impact your retirement portfolio? Are you concerned with all this talk about AI, maybe layoffs coming with AI, crypto, whatever it is, tech layoffs in Seattle? So if you're questioning if your portfolio is positioned for these financial uncertainties, wouldn't it be smart to get a second opinion? You can with Bulwark Capital's free Know Your Risk portfolio review. Bulwark is focused on risk management, built around the fundamentals of value investing. They're always looking for opportunities to lower risk, lower cost, and give your retirement as much upside as possible. So why not get a second opinion? It doesn't cost a thing. Schedule your Know Your Risk portfolio review today at knowyourriskpodcast.com. knowyourriskpodcast.com. Hate to say I told you so, but I did say that one of Governor Bob Ferguson's key campaign promises would never come to fruition. And so far, I'm correct. Let's talk about it in our segment, Unbelievable. All
right. When Bob Ferguson was running for governor, his first campaign ad bragged about his love for law enforcement and his desire to hire more police officers. Here it is.
50th, dead last. Washington has the lowest number of law enforcement officers per capita of any state. That's unacceptable. As governor, I'll fix it.
And what did I say about that promise that he made? Listen, one day he's prosecuting unsuccessfully police officers for murder. The next day he's running a campaign ad as governor saying that he's going to help hire more cops. No, he'll leave office. We'll still be last in the nation for police officers per capita. Yeah, he'll leave office. We'll still be last in the nation for police officers per capita. And one of the things I base that on is, you know, this is a guy who has a long track record of hating cops, or at least not speaking up on their behalf. He didn't say anything during the police defunding movement. He politically prosecuted three police officers unsuccessfully for murder because they were innocent. And it was all about pleasing the radical left. Right. And so I had said that you can't just throw money at the issue. This is about respect. This is about police officers feeling as if they're valued. There's a reason why after police defunding and the whole crazy stuff that happened here, we have the lowest number of police officers per capita of any state in the nation. But Bob Ferguson pressed forward, and in his first legislative session as governor, so this was just last year, he signed something called House Bill 2015 into law. And this was $100 million, he said, to go toward grants to cities to hire more police officers. Here he is on the day he signed it.
In my inaugural address, I made a promise that this legislative session, we must provide significant funding to hire more law enforcement officers in our state. I'm so pleased to have House Bill 2015 before me now to help address this situation.
But the day he signed House Bill 2015 into law on our show, I said this about it. The way this grant program is structured, there is no guarantee in it that even a penny of the $100 million goes to hiring police officers. So a year later, let's check in. How many police officers have been hired based on House Bill 2015 and that $100 million? Zero. I mean, this stuff isn't easy to predict. This stuff, it's not like I'm Nostradamus, okay? There was problems with the grant program that made it too difficult to utilize. And there was all this verbiage in there that said it could be used for a million things besides just hiring cops. This is the headline from the Washington State Standard. No cops hired so far with Washington's new $100 million grant program. Governor Ferguson pushed hard for the money to boost police staffing, but the rollout has been bumpy. So it says money from Washington's new $100 million program to boost police hiring has yet to reach cities and counties. Local officials have been frustrated with the rollout of the grants championed by Governor Ferguson to address Washington's status as dead last in the nation in police staffing per capita. They complain it's been slow and rife with technical issues. Derek Nunali, the government relations advocate at the Association of Washington Cities, says, is it concerning to cities across the state that nobody has received money from this new law yet? Yes, absolutely. The Standard goes on to report, there was always concern about the program. Local governments argued it would be hard to bring on officers with temporary state dollars, leaving departments on the hook for salaries and benefits once the well runs dry. Agencies have to spend the money by mid-2028. So we're already into 2026. Agencies that get the money from this $100 million grant, they've got to spend it by mid-2028. And so far, nobody's gotten a dime. And it's because Bob Ferguson lied about what the bill was. Now, initially, the bill was $100 million to go to cities and counties to hire police officers. But all the radical left can't allow that. So what do? They got their dirty little grubby hands in there. And they said, well, police officers or social workers, police officers or improved emergency response for natural disasters, police officers or virtually anything but police officers. So it allowed cities the latitude to really use it for anything that could be reasonably characterized as public safety. But on top of that, the grant required that these cities pass a sales tax increase that would allow them to continue to fund these police officer or whatever positions they have after the grant runs out. So there are all these steps to get the money. There were very few actual requirements that they spend the money on cops. And in a state that has most cities run by loony lefties, I knew the money wasn't going to go to cops. We're a year in. Sure, there's a couple years left. But so I can bring back up the video again, just like I did.
look at me right now, even with my weird little eye that's droopy. Look at me. Bookmark this. It will be March of 2028, and I will be here telling you that not a single cop was hired with the $100 million grant that Bob Ferguson said was intended to make sure Washington State wasn't the lowest in the nation per capita for police officers. It'll be March of 2028. The grants won't have been used to hire a single cop, and Washington State will still be last in the nation for the number of police officers per capita. And even cities right now that do have money to spend on cops, what are they spending it on? Well, for blue cities, anything but cops. In the city of Spokane, this from the Center Square, Spokane spends $100,000 in police funding on emergency aid for undocumented immigrants. Last in the nation for number of police officers. Maybe it's because you take money from the policing budget and you put it toward emergency aid for undocumented immigrants. Says the Spokane City Council awarded $100,000 in police funding to a nonprofit on Monday to provide emergency aid for non-English-speaking, low-income, undocumented immigrants. The proposal from Mayor Lisa Brown's office reached officials earlier this month after the Spokane Immigrant Rights Coalition sent a letter last September requesting funding to offset recent grant cuts. They distributed approximately $30,000 in legal aid to immigrants annually since 2021 through their Community Justice Fund. The money can be used to transport immigrants, regardless of immigration status, to court, to file documents, and to pay for medical appointments, or even temporary housing and childcare. So they took $100,000 from the police department, and they gave it to a non-government entity that specializes in helping specifically illegal aliens, undocumented immigrants, and they can use it to transport them to court, to help them file documents, to pay for their medical appointments, temporary housing and childcare. So money that's supposed to be for policing is now going to help illegals pay for childcare when legal citizens aren't even getting help paying for childcare? Are you really okay with that? It doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me, especially when Spokane, like many cities in Washington State, are dealing with low police staffing and a crime crisis. So, mark my words, the grant program isn't going to be used to hire more cops. It's been a year and nobody has gotten any money from it yet. All right, we'll get to national news, some more thoughts on the State of the Union and some key moments. And I also asked subscribers just to give me your thoughts on what moments stood out to you. So we'll get to that. First, Robin, Carol, Debbie, Connie, all Undivided viewers and listeners who have taken the First Mark Challenge in recent months and told us they had fantastic results, saving money, are just so happy they took the First Mark Challenge. Debbie S. says First Mark is the best. We're 70 years old and would rather gouge out our eyes than shop insurance companies for all our cars, boat, house, ATVs, etc. One-stop shopping with First Mark. Excellent rates and coverage. Anytime we've had a question or had to make a change, it was addressed and dealt with immediately. So comforting having them in our corner. I highly, highly recommend. First Mark Insurance has helped thousands of Washington families successfully manage the complicated world of insurance and save them thousands of dollars. And that's true for Mike and I, too. We had to get a bundle of new insurance as our lives changed and we got married. And we got all this new insurance and we weren't paying any more than we were paying separately before we got together. And it was awesome. So they do the same for local businesses, too, because we use the First Mark family at Undivided as well as me personally at home. So along with finding you your best price, being a local company means First Mark has boots on the ground to evaluate your needs as a business accurately and to be there with service you can count on. And I think having a local company working with your business's insurance needs is really important in Washington State, because there's a lot of crap that Washington State businesses go through that only a local business would understand. So firstmarkinsurance.com, firstmarkinsurance.com. The very best part is they work for you, not the insurance company, so they always have your best interest in mind. All right, so President Donald Trump was giving his State of the Union address last night, and as you know, a lot of Democrats decided not to go. What did they do instead? Let's check in.
I'm a mother. I'm a physician. And I have a flag.
No pueden encarcelarnos a todas.
Yes, thank you. Thank you.
No pueden encarcelarnos a todas.
I defy Trump and his authoritarian project by standing in joyful, radical, peaceful resistance.
No pueden encarcelarnos a todas.
With the Portland Frog Brigade.
Imprison us all,
Woo! Oh, God, that was Joy Reid? I didn't realize she'll turn to the camera. What song that was? That was a lot. All right, so some key moments from the State of the Union. I said off the top of the show what I thought the most significant one is challenging them to stand for the statement that you have to put Americans before illegal aliens and they wouldn't stand for it. I think to me the other moment that really stands out, because we talk about all these stories, right? But there are real people who are profoundly impacted by it. And there was the young woman from Ukraine, Arina, who was stabbed to death on a train. You all know the story by now, brutally murdered by a violent felon. So President Trump had her mom at the State of the Union, and you can just see the pain and the hurt. And in that moment, for Democrats not to stand for a mother whose daughter was violently murdered is unreal.
Last summer, 23-year-old Arina was riding home on the train when a deranged monster who had been arrested over a dozen times and was released through no cash bail stood up and viciously slashed a knife through her neck and body. No one will ever forget. There were people on that train. No one will ever forget the expression of terror on Irina's face as she looked up at her attacker in the last seconds of her life. She died instantly. She had escaped a brutal war only to be slain by a hardened criminal, set free to kill in America, came in through open borders. Mrs. Zaretska, tonight I promise you we will ensure justice for your magnificent daughter, Irina.
You can't see it right now, but Democrats aren't standing. How do you not stand?
How do you not stand?
Yeah, and calling them out. And I appreciate that Trump did that. So the other thing that I thought was very strategic, and he must have had a conversation or somebody did with the Speaker of the House, that they were going to let Democrats be unhinged. I mean, there was Ilhan Omar, Rashida Tlaib, and they were shouting and screaming. Did you notice that the Speaker of the House did not gavel? Trump handled it perfectly, and it showed them being insane. It showed them being insane, and President Trump wasn't off the rails at all. In fact, there were so many moments that were such that should have been wonderful unifying moments for our country. The men's hockey team, all of the heroes and the military heroes who were very rightfully so awarded medals. And yes, Democrats stood for a few of those, but there were these toxic moments where they were just shrieking at Donald Trump, and he handled it so well by almost not even caring. But then he would always point out, how can you not stand for that? How can you not stand for a mother whose daughter was brutalized in that way? It's just, where have we come as a country? Now, there was one moment where every Democrat got on their feet, and it was when President Trump said that they need to stop congressional Democrats from using inside info to play the stock market.
As we ensure that all Americans can profit from a rising stock market, let's also ensure that members of Congress cannot corruptly profit from using insider information. They stood up for that, I can't believe. I can't believe it. Did Nancy Pelosi stand up if she's here? Doubt it.
Oh my gosh, and the camera didn't pan to Nancy, which I thought was interesting, but of course she's just made a fortune off of using her intel as a member of Congress in the stock market. So she was on, was it CNN or MSNBC? One of the two afterwards, and CNN, they brought this up with her.
There was one moment, Madam Speaker, where he called you out specifically around, of course, congressional stock trading. What do you say back to him?
I say back to him, as that's what members said, look at your own self. The inference he wants to draw is there was something wrong with that, which there wasn't. And if there was, people get prosecuted for it. For a long time now, we've been trying to pass this law.
Answer
it. It doesn't have, now it has more support than it had before. And
Elizabeth Warren stood up and applauded. Elizabeth Warren stood and applauded tonight when the president talked about it.
Well, that we all did. I did, too. He said, did Nancy stand up? Yeah, I did, too. A lot of people stood up. A lot of Democrats stood up. I think that will pass, depending on what the bill is. I mean, what we had, we thought we could pass. It was actually a tougher bill than Governor Spanberger had put forth. We thought it could pass, but it was clear that it wasn't going to make it to the House and the Senate. But in any event, he gives his shout out. I don't pay any attention to him. What I'm concerned about is our democracy, which he is destroying.
Oh, there it is. What a pivot. Insider trading. I'm concerned about our democracy, which he is destroying. And honestly, she probably doesn't care if they pass a bill on insider trading because she's like at the end of her time there. So, and maybe her time here. I hate to say it like that, but she's already made her fortune that she's going to pass on to her kids. And there's so much money there, they'll pass it on to their kids and their kids and their kids. So she already got what she needed out of her time in Congress. And it was hundreds of millions of dollars. All right, I asked you guys, I just gave you a question, an open-ended question today, not even a poll for subscribers on Patreon and Locals. I asked what moment stands out to you from the State of the Union. A lot of you just saying, generally speaking, Democrats' lack of applause. Nicole, we watched it at Stake of the Union.
We did.
With Ari Hoffman, which was so fun at Daniel's Broiler last
Delicious.
Night.
Delicious.
Daniel's in Bellevue. I ate way too much. What was your favorite moment?
I guess favorite would probably be the hockey moment. I mean, that kind of gave you chills as they were all so proud walking in, and you know, that was a fun moment.
I do love, and I haven't seen this very much, this utilization of like surprising them with the walk-in. Like usually people are just seated, right? But like he would open the doors and do a big reveal at points, and I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah, because I guess that when he invited them, there wasn't actually
space.
Room for them.
Yes, that
and
makes
so
sense.
And so he said, we're going to make space, figure out how to make space. So I guess that's how he did it.
Yeah, I love that. So Leslie said the moment that stands out to her, Democrats refusing to stand for Erica Kirk and the parents of a murdered daughter. I think that was the woman who's the parents who their daughter was killed in D.C. Yeah, I didn't see if Democrats did or did not stand for that, but it would just be shocking if they didn't.
It was shocking to see that. So
Paul on X, I loved the acknowledgement of American heroes. However, I felt the existential message and policy agenda was diluted, and I miss on the continued pain of most Americans recovering from the damage of COVID and the Biden agenda. Yeah, I don't know if still, I still think that people are suffering from what happened with COVID, but there's a lot of other things happening right now that might be more pertinent. Annette, how being a good human being seems to be absent from so many of these electeds. It is not acceptable to show compassion, gratitude, or just decent manners as a person anymore. Last night was an exercise on how not to be an adult. Well, it's because they're all trying to score points, and it's the midterms, and we cannot make him seem like he's been a success. So we can't stand up for even these just moments that are clearly fine to stand up for.
How they don't realize it makes them look worse than him.
Yeah.
I don't understand, because that looks terrible. Then the story becomes they didn't stand instead of whatever else. It wouldn't have been a story.
No, because it would have been, they stood. And, you know, would the White House have said, even Democrats stood up for the president? I'm sure they would have used it either way. But you would have taken all the air out of his sails on that question about what comes first, Americans or illegals. Had you just stood up and gave him a 100%, because of course they have to come first. You're not elected, well, maybe by a few illegals, but by and large not by illegals. Tina says the point that stands out to her are the various medals of honor bestowed on our American heroes. I always love that stuff. And I didn't realize that there was someone so gravely injured during the Venezuelan operation. So it was a pilot, and they told the story about, like, right when they were about to land, it was machine gun fire that just tore through his legs. I didn't realize that had happened.
Yeah, I didn't hear about
one
it.
One thing I will say, and we were kind of, I was sort of like, while we were at the Stake of the Union, is they applauded him so long that I was like, let him sit down. Because they had brought him in on a wheelchair, but then he stood up on this, like, walker thing. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, this guy got his leg shredded by bullets. Like, let's, I know you want to applaud for him, but maybe let him sit down. And the same thing with the 100-year-old World War II veteran who got the Medal of Honor. And I'm like, okay, all right,
Maybe let him sit down for the applause, because that man's getting pretty old. He's getting up there. But yeah, no, it was a very nice moment. Very cool stuff.
Very sweet.
And Stake of the Union. I need to steal that idea from Ari Hoffman at KVI. It was a lot of fun. It was. We need to do something like that. All right. We'll get to comments from the live stream coming up next. First, if you are a landlord in Washington State, you're probably feeling sometimes like you are out there all alone and that the government hates you and that they paint you as an evil, horrible human being. Well, you don't have to be alone. You can become a member of the Rental Housing Association of Washington, and they will stand with you to navigate these troubling waters that we're in, the rough seas. They have a ton of events all across the state all year long where you can meet other landlords, housing providers, and talk about some of the issues that you're facing and maybe some of the policies that you'd like to see pushed at the local and state level. And they can also help you on an individual basis navigate this environment that we're in. So become a member of the RHA today, Rental Housing Association of Washington, Washington's trusted resource empowering housing providers, rhawa.org, rhawa.org. All right, some comments from the live stream on Trump nailing the State of the Union. De Pluribus says, the Democrats say Trump makes them look bad. They make themselves look bad. The Democrats say Trump makes them look bad. Do they say that? Or makes the country look bad, maybe.
I don't know. I guess I'm sure that they say that.
Yeah. Lynn was the best speech ever. Showed us all what Democrats really think. They can't stand up for us American people. Unbelievable. And it really was Trump's best speech.
He wasn't worried about being elected again, I guess.
Yeah. He was very loose, whatever. Too. Because it wasn't so much where he was just sticking to the thing, but he kept it loose and fun at the moments that it made sense and charming. And he was able to go off the prompter and come back again,
right?
Which has always been his trouble. I mean, it was long, but it didn't feel long.
No,
as long as it was. I thought it was very good.
I was thinking to myself, he didn't make the record, and then they said he did. Like, oh, that went fast.
Yeah. Scorpion, Democrats are more interested in radical concepts and illegals than American citizens, and it shows over and over again. Mm-hmm. Let's see here. Moon Goddess, $10 super chat. I think this has to do with the young girl that he highlighted, Sage, who was like torn away from her family over radical gender ideology. Moon Goddess says, CPS stole me from my parents when I was 9. My parents fought the state until they ran out of money, and I became a ward of the state and was abused in every way possible until I got emancipated at 16. That is horrible. I'm so sorry to hear that. On no local media coverage of the middle school attack, Tina says, Brandy, this must get to the public. These girls that assaulted a 13-year-old are countries under assault in every way. There is, from farming to schools due to Democratic policies from Inslee Ferguson and all their government minions and bureaucrats. The school incident is a reflection of what citizens who just want their kids educated are facing. Your voice was made for such time as this. Thank you. Well, I appreciate that. Not Alone says, I said, how do you get a restraining order on another student in the same school out loud to myself? And you immediately said it directly after me. Mm-hmm. I'm curious how that works. Yeah, I have no idea.
I think they're trying to put them in separate classes because at one point their classes were in the same space. And so they're switching things so that the girls don't pass.
Yeah. I mean,
but I don't know if that's an extra security guard. I don't know.
Wild.
Mm-hmm.
On Cho confronting Mayor Wilson, Papa Woody says they will try to use any tool in their little bag of tricks to subdue shining any light on the truth and facts of their ineptitude to do their jobs. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Chris Lundstrom, maybe she is just massively underqualified to do her job. Shocking, I know.
Maybe.
She is massively underqualified. Now I'm all self-conscious because Nicole said my eye poked yesterday. She goes, your eye is lazy. First of all, my eyes are always been a little lazy, but I do see it now. It gets closed more than the other. I think it gets sore.
The longer the show goes, the more tired your
eye
seems to get.
The more droopy my eye gets. I didn't get bad Botox, and I didn't get, I didn't have a stroke. My eye's healing, okay?
Mm.
Nicole, literally after the show, your eye's real droopy. I'm just like, come on, man.
That's not what I said. I said, does your eye hurt?
It looks no, you didn't today. Say that. You said my eye was lazy.
I said, is it swollen? I asked questions first. And then I said,
well,
it looks a little lazy.
I mean, it's always a little lazy, but it's just more droopy than normal. I think it's going to be fixed by next week. On our press pass case, Jojo Potato says they don't want the AG fighting against the First Amendment. It'll look bad. Well, I have an easy solution. Just give us a press pass. We'll save everyone a lot of money and time. Steve, hiring an outside law firm can be a tactic to create attorney-client privilege and hide some communications from discovery. Oh, I'm sure they have all sorts of
Tricks.
Eric, I don't understand why we need to be respectful or nice. They work for us and need to do what they're told. Well, when I say that about emailing elected officials, I just don't want you at my behest to like threaten them or something. And I don't think a lot of you would do that. But I just mean like keep it
civil and
respectfully adult. In the sense of like adult, you know, because they're not going to listen if it's just a personal attack or something. I don't think they
dismiss them when they're filled with swears or whatever it is.
Blah, blah, blah. But it's just, you know. Maybe it's just the nice thing to say. On no new cops hired, contrary to Bob's big promise, Eric says it's not hard to predict that past bills for grants in this state, that the funds will be misused. Yeah, Chuck, there is some Democrat city with someone watching this show that will hire one solitary parking enforcement officer just to prove Brandy wrong. Yeah, Bob will make sure. At least one new cop.
It's just like COVID funding, though. They just throw out this money and like, just spend it now. We'll figure it out later. Yeah. And that's why we're in the position we're in right now.
Yeah. Well, here's my question. What if there's $100 million set aside? Mm-hmm. It hasn't gotten to anyone yet. It's been a year. We're in a budget crisis. What do you want to believe that in 2-3 years it won't have gotten anywhere, but like the money, where will the money be?
It'll have disappeared
somewhere. You know what I mean? Sergeant Pickles, hello, back from Tokyo. Amazing place where school kids ride the metro alone because they actually care about safety. 10 out of 10 would recommend. Welcome back, Sergeant Pickles. One more super chat here from Papa. Hit that like and answer the show poll, homies. Remember, they can take away your hard-earned paycheck, but they can never take your freedom. Or can they? Yes, they probably can.
Scary.
But I'll tell you what, I'll bail you out. And if they won't let me bail you out, I'll break you out. Okay, our sanity check today will take us to Portland first. If you're thinking of escaping the insanity of Washington State, maybe moving to Tennessee or Texas or Florida, wherever, Idaho, Montana, just some ideas, reach out to our friend Wes Jones at sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com. Wes has been doing this for a long time. He's been through all the market ups and downs. There's a reason for it. He's very good at what he does, and he knows what the market demands at any given time. And so the first thing that you should do is reach out him just for a free market analysis, and he'll talk to you about down to the neighborhood level what your expectations can be for when you sell your home, what you can expect to get, how long it might take, and the big thing also is how much effort and energy and maybe money you need to put into your home to get the most out of it, because the market can change that a lot. I mean, remember the time when it was like 5 years ago and you could sell anything? Wasn't there literally a half burned down shack in West Seattle?
Oh, yeah.
That was like this national listing because it was like $1 million something.
Yes.
There was a time where it didn't matter. I don't believe that we're in that time right now. We'll probably get back to it, but sometimes you do need a little extra TLC put into your home. We all know that we'll live in our house forever, ignore issues, and then we go to sell it and we're like, ah, Wes can help you with that. Sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com. It really just is a better way to sell your home. All right, let's get to our closing sanity check. Again. Not Nostradamus. This stuff is easy to predict because it happens all the time. So we're dealing with this in Washington State and Seattle, where you've got all of these drug stores and grocery stores closing down in high crime areas because they're making virtually no money. It's on the margins, right? And then they have to have extra security. They've got to invest in plexiglass because they're getting just stolen from every single day. City won't do anything about it. So what do we see? We see all these closed businesses. The exact same thing is happening in Portland. Not a surprise. That place is a ghost town. So a local Portland station did a story on a CVS closing down. And again, not a surprise. I think what surprises me is that the citizens know this is going on, and something tells me they vote for it anyway.
People we spoke with weren't exactly shocked to hear the store is closing its doors.
I'm not surprised. And everything's locked up in there. Like, you want certain things, they're under lock and key. You're like, oh my God.
Similar problems cost the area one of its other retailers just a few years ago.
Once you have more people just stealing from these stores, eventually it's just going to lead to them shutting down, because it's like, how can you run a business in those situations?
You can't. You can't. That has been our closing sanity check. Vote different. That has been today's episode of Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving Common Sense a comeback. I will tell you, so much more enjoyable to watch President Trump's State of the Union when you don't hate him. So much more enjoyable. Had a hell of a time. Might have been a glass of champagne, but I also think just funny, you know? What else? Become a subscriber. Become a paid subscriber. We already told you, I mean, the mainstream media won't even cover in Seattle the story about that 13-year-old girl being beaten. You wouldn't even know about it if it weren't for Undivided, let's be honest. So if you've been sort of a freeloader, but you want to support our work to try to get the stories like that out there, it's $5 a month. I think that's a pretty good deal. We've never risen our rates for inflation. UndividedPod.com, Undivided P-O, not even during Bidenflation, in fact. POD.com, UndividedPOD.com. Click on the banner that says, support the show.